So far in this text, we have studied the meaning of Upanishad. Upanishad. Upa means near, ni means below, shat means sit. So this knowledge of the Upanishad can only be got by approaching a teacher, sitting near the teacher, and below. Below means an attitude of humility. To learn anything, whether you're learning golf or mathematics or science, or those, especially in the scriptures, this attitude of humility is very, very important, because it is the ego that is the biggest obstacle in our spiritual growth. And if I start with the idea that I already know it, you know, I'm just testing the teacher, or let me see how much the teacher knows. And I've asked many teachers, but let me see how this one answers. With that attitude, we will never learn. So the word Upanishad is studying from a teacher with an attitude of humility, that I am empty, O teacher, you fill my vessel. I'm a blank slate, and let the teacher write on it. If your slate or if your blackboard is already full with a lot of writing, and then you're asking the teacher to write on it, it will get lost. So I have to empty my mind, clean the blackboard, and then let the teacher write on it. It does not mean that I don't use my intelligence, or I don't discuss, or I don't, you know, inquire, but there should be an attitude of humility and some amount of faith. Faith in the teacher and faith in the scriptures. Because the Upanishads are obviously the scriptures, as we have in the 3 weeks, I had gone into a lot of detail about the Vedas, what they contain, and how the Upanishad is the last portion, is the highest knowledge, and what are the qualities of a student. Last week, Mahadevanji, very beautifully, I was told, covered the Shanti Mantra, or the peace invocation. In the Vedic times, before the students started any study, the student and the teacher chanted a peace invocation or Shanti Mantra. And I'll just very briefly summarize the Shanti Mantra of this Upanishad. I know they did it in great detail last week, so I won't spend too much time. So the student and the teacher say, O Lord, Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunuyama Deva. O Lord, whatever we hear with our ears, may it be auspicious, may it be good. So if I want to hear good, what are the two requirements? I have to speak good. If I myself am speaking bad, I am the first one who will hear it. And the second one is I have to associate with good people. Because then only if I associate with crooks and criminals and gangsters, I'm not going to hear what is good, so I have to be very careful about my association. Similarly, he says, Bhadram Pashyem Akshabhirya Jatraha. So also through my eyes may I see everything that is auspicious. So may I see good in everything, and may whatever I perceive be good. Sthirai Rangaihi Stushtu Vagam Sastanu Bihi. So he says, the student and the teacher say, that may my body be healthy, and may whatever life I have been allotted, Lord, it doesn't matter, I'm not asking for 50 years or 70 years or 90 years. Whatever time has been given to me at this time, in this lifetime, may I be healthy. Healthy why? So is it he wants to be healthy so he can enjoy sense pleasures and have a lot of girlfriends and have a wonderful life? No. May my body be healthy. Vyashema deva hitam yadayuhu, so I may serve the world. He says, I may serve the gods. Now, gods do not need any help. They don't need any service. When he says, may I serve the gods, means may I serve the world with whatever time I have, let my body be healthy. So that is the prayer. Then he says, may the celestial gods bless us. They always ask for blessings. In those days, they didn't have Ram and Krishna and Hanumanji and, you know, those gods, but they had these celestial bodies, the forces of nature, like even the American Indians, you know, they worship the forces of nature. So he says, Swastina Indro Vriddhashravaha. Indra is the god of thunder, the god of lightning, like Zeus. You know, in the Greek mythology, Zeus is the king of gods and he is the god of thunder and lightning. So Indra is the god of thunder and rain and he is the king of the gods and he is the most ancient. So may the god Indra protect us. Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha. And may the god, lord of the sun, may the sun god, because sun was always worshipped in the ancient times. In fact, the most famous mantra is the Gayatri mantra, which offers prostrations to the sun god. So may the Lord Sun protect us, and may he give us knowledge, because they say the sun knows everything. He's a Vishwavedaha, because the sun perceives everything that is going on. So may the sun god give us knowledge. Swasti Nastarksho Arishta Nemihi. And the lord of the wind, which is the bringer of all goodness. You know, the wind removes, if there's pollution, if there's a foul smell, if there's a wind blows, or even in the valley, sometimes they have these strong wind storms, it clears all the pollution. So the wind may give me the right knowledge and clear all the impurities of my mind. Swasti no Brihaspatir Dadhatu. Brihaspatir is the teacher of the gods. So the divine teacher, the guru, may he also protect me, may he give me the knowledge. So that's what they are saying, that may my hearing be good, may my vision be good, and may all these gods protect me, and may my body be healthy, so I should serve the world. So the idea is that there are two things I have to do with this life. One is serve the world, and second is know God. Get this Brahma Vidya. That is the only two purposes in this lifetime. That is the only thing I need to accomplish. And one helps in the other. As you serve the world, your mind becomes purer. And with the pure mind, you can get this knowledge. So this is so far what we had covered. I think Mahadevanji briefly mentioned the word Kevalam, because it is called Kevalya Upanishad, Kaivalya. But let us spend a little time understanding what is the meaning of Kaivalya. So we need to understand the meaning of the title before we can go into the text. So the word Kaivalya means alone, one without a second. It comes from the root Kevalam. Keval means one without a second. So Kaivalya Upanishad is that which talks about one. Now what do we mean by one? One without a second, because the entire Vedanta knowledge is based on Advaita. Advaita means two, Advaita means not two. That means this whole universe is one. There are no differences. You say, well, why do we see so many differences? That, you know, the text will go into more detail. But let us see what are the differences that we perceive in this world. You know, we say, well, we see such a variety. So many plants and birds and animals and fish and different kinds of food and different clothes and different people and languages and culture. And why is there so much difference and what is the difference? So our ancient teachers, the sages, classified all differences in the world into three: Vijatiya, Sajatiya and Swagata. Vijatiya Bheda, that means differences among different species. So we see so many species, right? Dogs are different from cats. Cats are different from humans. Then humans are different from plants. Plants are different from fish. So there are different species. There are fish species, dog, cat, animal. Like cats, like tiger and lion, they come in the cat category. Humans, plants. So, obviously, human is different from plant, plant is different from dog, dog is different from cat. So, one is, there are different species. Now, within the species, also we find differences. That is called sajatiya, in the same species. That means, say in the dogs, you know, how many varieties of dogs we have? We have Cocker Spaniel and Poodle and Alsatian and Pit Bull. So each variety of dog is different from the other. There are different breeds, there are different categories, and people are very particular. You ask him, what breed is this dog? They say, oh, it is a purebred dog. What do they mean? That they're very particular whom they breed with. And the male and the female dog that breed, they have to be of a high quality. Therefore, the child, the dog is purebred, and they don't let their dog mate with anybody. It's interesting. We are very particular about whom dogs should mate with, whom they breed with. But in our case, there is no anybody and everybody. Same thing about diet. They are so particular. My dog or my cat should get proper high protein food and properly mate. And then we eat anything and everything anytime. So that is within the same species. So differences among different species, differences among same species, and then differences among the same individual. Like within an individual, my nose is different from my ear, from my hands, from my feet. Each one, the nose cannot see, the eyes cannot hear, the hands cannot walk. So different parts of my body do different functions and have different appearances. So that is called Swagata Bheda. So in this world, you find different species. Then within each species, we have difference. Like among humans, we have Asians and Mexicans and whites and Caucasians and blacks and all. And then same way, within an individual, I find different differences. But the word Kevala means one without a second, in which there is no difference in that Brahman, in that total consciousness, who appears as this world. There is no difference. What do you mean there is no difference? I see all these differences. This person belongs to my race, this one belongs to my church, this one belongs to my caste. And then obviously, the dog or the cat is not me. But this text will tell us, at the end of this text, you will reach that state of Kevalam, where I alone am this entire universe. This entire universe is me. That state of oneness is the goal of this beautiful Upanishad, which will take us to that highest state and also will explain why we perceive the variety. What is the reason we perceive the variety? What is the reason this variety was created? And how do we overcome this attitude of difference and of this feeling of mine and not mine and yours and all this, selfishness, greed, and all that will be reduced to a great extent if we study this scripture carefully. So that is the meaning of the word Kevalam. So having studied this, now we can approach the first verse. I think I have a different book because I gave away my book last week. I don't have it, but the first one is Atha Ashvalayano. You found that? What page is that on?
Nine.
Okay. So we'll just read that, and I will then explain the meaning, which is the beginning of this text. Part one or chapter one. Atha Ashvalayanaha. Atha Ashvalayanaha. Bhagavantam. You can just chant up. Atha Ashvalayanaha Bhagavantam Parameshtim Upasametya Uvacha. Uvacha means spoke. So this text is in the past tense because obviously this Upanishad happened thousands of years ago. Most all of our Upanishads are several thousand years old. And it was interesting that every Upanishad and even the Bhagavad Gita, which we study every Sunday, which we'll be starting in 2 weeks, on the 16th, we will be starting our Sunday classes at 11 o'clock. But the Bhagavad Gita is also a dialogue between the teacher and the student. The student is Arjuna, and the teacher, of course, is the Lord Himself, Lord Shri Krishna. So here also, this Upanishad is a dialogue between a student and a teacher. Because we find that if the text is just dryly written, just a series of messages coming, one after the other, it becomes boring. But if it is in the form of a question and answer, then what happens is that A, we can relate with the student. Yes, yes, that's my question too. And secondly, the conversational style is easy for us to follow. Also, what it means is that to get this knowledge, I have to approach a teacher. This knowledge cannot be got from videos or DVDs. I mean, yeah, if it has been, you know, the knowledge has, suppose some great teacher has spoken a DVD or a video or a cassette tape or a CD, yes, you can listen and get this knowledge, but still having a live teacher is very beneficial because, again, this knowledge is very subtle. It's very obtuse. It's not very easy. So having a teacher helps us to ask questions because each one of us has unique questions. And whatever little I know is, again, because I have had the good fortune of meeting so many, you know, beautiful teachers who come here into the Chinmaya Mission, Swami Ishwarananda. Then we had Swami Tejomayananda Ji, and then we have Vimal Ji and all these teachers who have come. Then, of course, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda himself, I had the good fortune to hear him and also have listened to his tapes. So people say, well, I can get this knowledge from a book. That is true. But there are two problems. One is if, you know, somebody says, why can't I get this knowledge from a book? So somebody asks a teacher, why can't I get this knowledge from a book? Teacher says, can you ask this question to the book? Why can't I get this knowledge? No, the book cannot answer. That's number one. Number two, the book will not know, you know, whether you are listening or whether you are asleep, whether you have left. And thirdly, or the CD, it keeps on running. You know, I may be listening for a while, then I may go get some food from the fridge, then I may get some water, and the CD is going on because the guru doesn't know that you have left. And then thirdly, if I have doubts, then there are doubts always arise, as we see here also when we have discussion, always have people have a lot of questions. So that's why this knowledge has to be obtained from a teacher. And here, it's very interesting. This Upanishad has the highest knowledge because the student was Ashvalayana. Ashvalayana, we have heard about him and we have read about him, and it is said that he himself was a great scholar. Ashvalayana was not an ordinary student. He had not just graduated out of school or out of Gurukula, but he had himself studied the scriptures. In fact, he had composed many of the mantras in the Rig Veda. I think we had a few weeks back, I had talked about the Vedas. And the Rig Vedas are the most ancient. So the most ancient text of the Hindus called the Rig Veda, which was the first one, which is dated as several thousand years before Christ, he had actually composed so many of the mantras, so many of the verses. So he was a very advanced student. He had studied the scriptures. He had written commentaries on that. He had actually composed so many of the verses of the mantras in the Upanishads. But what happens is that sometimes we have intellectually understood, especially this Brahma Vidya, this knowledge, you have intellectually understood. And you may even have practiced. In this case, the student had even practiced, but did not have the final experience. So there is a difference between intellectually knowing and then having the experience. Like you may have studied medicine. You know, you have studied all the medical textbooks. You passed the MD exam and, you know, you passed with honors. But then such a person goes to a hospital or a clinic to work. And when the patient comes, you know, he doesn't know what to do. He's so confused. Why? Because this knowledge has not gone into practice. Or I have got recipes from the internet. I get a recipe, but then when I make the recipe, I somehow don't do it very well, and the dish comes out very different from what I had, you know, seen on the internet. Or an engineer, you know, he has studied all the engineering textbooks, but then when it comes time to build a dam or build a road, he doesn't make the right, you know, measurements, and the dam or the road, you know, doesn't work. So here also the student had studied the scriptures, had a wonderful knowledge, but the final experience of the highest truth he did not have. So that was the reason he approached the teacher. Not that he didn't know, but he needed that final. It is like he was almost ready, and then it's like a firewood, it is already, and then one the spark, you kindle a little fire and the whole wood starts blazing and the room gets lit. So similarly, sometimes a student has all the knowledge but needs the teacher to give him the final touch. That's why it starts with atha. Atha means then. So the moment we hear the word then, that means that the student had already not only studied but had the required qualities. A few weeks ago we talked about Vivek, Vairagya, Shat Sampati and Mumukshutva. So he already had the detachment from the world, Vairagya, and he had the right knowledge, what is real, what is unreal, what is my goal, what is not my goal. He had already tasted the world and said, this world is not giving me what I need. What I need is the highest joy. And that's what I need. So he had that taste. And then also talking about that, there's a very famous story of a Yajnavalkya. There was a rishi, there was a great sage who had a huge ashram, like a mission, where he had a lot of land and he had a lot of cows, and students used to come and study. He had a lot of buildings. And it was a very, very prosperous, very well doing well mission, where people used to come and live, people used to stay. Now, he had been running this for many years and he got tired. He says, I'm tired of this. I want to go to the forest and meditate. He said, I'm going to just give this away and then I want to meditate because I've done enough teaching. Now I need to do myself. So he had two wives, Katyayani and Maitri. So he said, I'm going to divide this entire property and land among two. So one wife, Katyayani, can have one and Maitri can have the other. So he divided among two and then he was ready to live. And the first wife, Katyayani, she said, that's good. Not that you are gone, but at least it's okay. Now I have enough land, I have enough property, I can sell it and I can live comfortably. I know my husband will be gone, but at least I can live in comfort. And, in all the scriptures say that ultimately we have to take sannyas, we have to detach and go for meditation. So my husband is going. But the second wife, Maitri, says, ask her husband, where are you going? He said, well, I'm going to meditate. So why are you leaving us here? She said, well, I'm leaving you well taken care of. You have all this land, you have all these cows, and you have these buildings. You can live very comfortably and take care of yourself. She says, you are leaving all this for what? For something higher, right? He says, yeah, I'm leaving it because I want to attain the highest. So she says, all this stuff you are leaving me, will this give me that highest joy, that permanent happiness? He says, no, that's why I'm leaving it, because it's not going to give you the highest, but it is my duty to take care of both of you, so I am doing that. So she says, I don't want it. I want what you are going for. That is what I want. If you are leaving all this and going somewhere, then do you expect me to stay here and be caught in this? So that kind of detachment, that kind of desire to know should be there in all of us. That no matter what happens, my goal in life is to get this highest knowledge. And that is the only reason to study the Upanishad. That are you here to get the highest knowledge, which we will talk next week. We don't have time this week. What will this highest knowledge get me? What will this give me? That is the only reason we are here. And if you are, so people think by studying this, will I become, will I become richer? No. Will I get more land? Will I get a bigger house? Will I get a better car? None of these. What you will get is a clear perception, and what this knowledge will do is change your vision. It's not going to change the world. They say, will it make me happier? Yes. Will it, you know, I have a problem with my husband or my spouse or my boss or my children or my neighbor or my cat or my dog? Will it change them? No. It will not change your circumstances. Your husband will remain the same, the wife will remain the same, the children, the dog, the cat, the neighbor, the boss. Everything will remain the same, but your vision will change. How we look at the world will change. The world will not change. The world will remain the same, but my perception will change. My ability to handle problems will improve significantly by getting this knowledge. So I'll just quickly talk about the teacher. So we talked about the student. He was a great scholar. And the teacher, it says, is Bhagavantam Parameshtim, the Lord Creator Himself. It is that Brahmaji, who created this universe, was the teacher. So they say, well, if this person was a student, was a human, how could he approach the Creator? How could he talk to God? You know, we say, well, I don't see how he could do that. So the answer is that advanced meditators, people who have advanced in meditation, who have progressed significantly on this path, in their meditation can travel into subtle worlds. You know, if you talk to certain people who are very advanced in spirituality, they will tell you that in their meditation, in their silence, they call that journey. Some people call it journey, some people call it travel. But people actually go into subtler worlds, higher worlds, where the gods live and the angels live. And you can actually, in your meditation, of course, the body will remain on the earth, but the mind and intellect, the subtle body, as we see here, the mind and intellect, the gross body will remain here, but the subtle body, the mind and intellect, can travel to higher worlds. So this student must have, in his meditation, traveled to the world of the creator Brahmaji. And there he approaches Brahmaji, he bows down to him with great humility and uvacha, and he asks the question. So that is what we study from this today's text, that the student has to be qualified, student has to have detachment, and then the student with the right attitude has to approach a qualified teacher. And here the teacher is no other than the creator himself, Prajapati, the creator, Brahmaji, the lord of the universe. So he actually answers the student's question. That's why this Upanishad is not basic. There is nothing simple in that. It directly goes to the highest. It's a very fast progressing Upanishad. It does not build up. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, there are 18 chapters, 700 verses. So the knowledge is slowly, you know, second chapter, third chapter. There is nothing like that. Directly they dive into the highest knowledge. There is no story, there is nothing much. So that's why this Upanishad is, even though it is one of the smaller Upanishads, but the knowledge is very high. It is not something that, and we'll try in the next few weeks to clarify this, how. And also this Upanishad is directly related to meditation. It talks about the technique of meditation, the benefit of meditation, and the goal of meditation. Everything is covered. That's why I thought in this class, this would be a good one to take. It's actually quite an interesting Upanishad and has a lot of practical, you know, aspects. But there is no story, there is no, you know, basic, there is no foundation which is laid. Directly he says, I want the highest knowledge. So the student's question, I had prepared that, but we don't have time. So we'll do the student's question next week, and then the answer of the teacher as to what is the question and what is the answer. Any questions, any comments for today's class? The word concept of Kevalam, is that clear to everybody? Yeah, I think that's very important to understand the meaning of Kaivalya. What is this Kaivalya? What is one without a second? And how I can reach that is the goal of that. In fact, in the last verse, it says, Kaivala Padam Ashnute, Om Namah Iti. So by this knowledge, the student reaches that oneness, where he becomes one with the whole universe and then sees the one alone. And then in that student's eye, there is no multiplicity, there is no variety, there is nothing but I and I alone. And that is the goal of this scripture.
This I guess, tied to an identity of mm-hmm. some sort.
Absolutely, yeah. Because we get so divided, even among religion. Religion is supposed to bring us together, but as we see now in this world, religion is the cause of all the problems, because my religion, my church, my, you know, my faith, my book, unfortunately, that has been the problem. And that's what the Upanishads, even though they were thousands of years ago, this knowledge is very relevant today if we really apply that. And as we see in this class also, we have a variety of people from different, you know, cultures, different faiths. So it's good, you know, that we are studying this text. But thank you, that's a good point. Oh, and one other point I want to pick up, Kevalam is alone. It does not mean lonely. See, there's a difference between alone, that I want to be alone, and I am lonely. A lot of times when I am alone, I become lonely. Oh, I have nobody to talk to. And I pick up a phone and call somebody, or, you know, I text somebody, or I email somebody, or if nothing else, I just turn on the TV, you know, just to keep me entertained, or I go talk to my dog. Now, that is called being lonely, that I need somebody to make me complete. Alone means I am happy with myself. I alone am happy. So this knowledge teaches us to be happy alone. It does not mean that you have to leave everything and go to the forest. But if I have the people around, I see the oneness. And if I have nobody around, I'm still happy. And that's what was this, these sages, if you see in their life, they were happy just by themselves. They would be singing, they would be sitting in their own peace. And if some student came and asked him a question, they would answer. If they didn't come, they were happy with God, happy with their own self. So there's a difference between alone and lonely. And alone, solitude, we must all practice. Not by being lonely, but we should, each one of us, take out some time every day and sit and do nothing. Just do nothing. You don't have to be doing something all the time. Just sit in solitude, alone, be with myself, and, you know, feel the Lord's presence. That's what the benefit of meditation is. It teaches us to be happy, alone, with or without anybody. So that is the difference between alone and lonely. I meant to mention that, but yes.
Is there a particular time which is considered good for meditation in night or early morning?
Yeah, we recommend early morning. That's called the Brahma Muhurat. Brahma Muhurat is approximately around 3:30 till about 5 actually. Maybe you can extend it to 6. But early morning is the best time. Most faiths recommend early morning meditation because A, your mind is fresh, you've had a good night's sleep, and so you won't feel sleepy. If you meditate at the end of the day, after you're tired and it's 9-10 o'clock at night, you'll have a tendency to fall asleep. Though there are some schools of meditation that even Maharshi Mahesh Yogi, even they recommend twice a day.
Morning
you can meditate to get your day started right. And then since you're all wound up, you've done so much, then if you spend few minutes unwinding, so meditation helps. But if you only have one time, then it's preferable in the morning. But a lot of times we don't have, when somebody says, I have to be at work at 5 or 6 in the morning, then we say evening is fine too. But it should be unhurried. You should not be that, oh, I have only 5-10 minutes, let me quickly get it over with. I should be relaxed.
Shouldn't, huh?
Yeah, you shouldn't be sleepy. Right. So early morning is best, but some people use meditation to unwind, which is also fine. You know, you quieten your mind and you know, you bring it from all the things just to that one Lord who is within me. And then your mind is more peaceful. Yeah, so that's the point. Let us sit with an attitude of surrender, humility. And this moment, I am a seeker of truth. I am not a man or a woman. I am not a father or a mother or a child. I have no relationships. I have no job. I am a humble seeker of truth, and I seek the Lord's grace and my Guru's blessings. eyes closed, back erect but not stiff. Today we shall practice the chanting of Om. That is a beautiful way to achieve silence. Consciously relax your body from head to toe. First, relax the upper third of the body. From the face up to the hips, the neck, the shoulders, the arms, the hands, the fingers, all relaxed. The chest muscles relax. Relax the middle part of the body, the abdomen, the back, and the hips. Relax. Now relax the lower part. The thighs, the calves, the feet, the toes, all relaxed. Now you can go in reverse and again relax the whole body. Now turn your attention to the breath. Just watch the air as it moves in and out. Initially, take 3 deep breaths, as deep as you can, slowly. And after 3 deep breaths, just observe the breath. Watching the breath helps to quieten the mind. Now we shall chant Om. Three times we will chant audibly where your neighbor can hear it. Chant Om loud and slow. And then pay attention to the silence between the two Oms. The Om emerges from silence and merges back into the silence. That silence is my goal. Now three times we shall whisper Om, where only you can hear it. Just whisper to yourself. Now chant Om mentally, long and slow, and then pause in between, and then slowly let the silence lengthen, and ultimately the chanting disappears in that silence. And in that silence, you feel the inner peace, and take the mind inward to who is watching the silence. Not as a question, but just as an observation. And just be aware of the witness of the silence. So let us chant Om silently in our mind and then merge into the silence. Oh.